Hey there, it's Colt Cabana. Thank you so much for checking out the past shows from the archives. All the past ones in this feed are ad-free. I took out all the ads. If this is something you like, you can listen to every single episode of the Art of Wrestling podcast dating back to 2010, absolutely ad-free for only $4 a month on my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Colt Cabana. All right, enjoy the show.
This is the Art of Wrestling with professional wrestler Colt Cabana. It's Colt
Cabana. That is an announcer, which must make it official. My name is Colt Cabana. This is the Art of Wrestling, and it's on, man. It's official. Welcome to the podcast, the radio interview, the internet wave file, MPEG, MP3, MP4. I'm not really sure, man. This is the first run. We're going to see if it works. I'm going to give it the old college try, the old Western Michigan University go. And I'm excited. This is kind of like a new little venture. We're going to see if it works. A lot of people have been saying that this isn't a good idea. Colt, don't be a mark for yourself. Don't be a mark in general. Don't be an idiot. And you know what? Maybe 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago, I would have said, oh, I don't want to get a bad reputation or anything. But now I'm 30 years old, 12 years in wrestling, and I could give a fuck. This sounds like fun. This sounded like a fun opportunity, something to give to my fans. And I'm going to give it. I'm going to give it back. Give it back to the wrestling community. My friends, Cable Guy Jeff over at TSM Radio and Stu Stone from SundayNightStu.com, they presented me this. They've been doing their thing for 5 years on iTunes and the whole internet. Stu Stone's a genius on the internet. Of course, he's been in Donnie Darko. He had his own show on MTV with Jamie Kennedy called Blowing Up. They wrote a rap about Bob Saget. And they said, listen, we're doing our thing with our podcast or our radio show. We're doing that for Hollywood. We're doing that for the entertainment world, the comedy world. They said, Colt, where's the wrestling stuff? You know, we'll take care of TSM Radio. We'll take care of the comedy. We'll take care of the bits. We'll take care of Hollywood. Where's the wrestling podcasts? Wrestlers talking to wrestlers with a wrestler's view. And I said, I don't know. I got no clue. And a light bulb went in my head. And now I'm taking on my responsibility. It's my job. I've put this burden on my back. And I said, let's go for it, man. Let's go do it. You know what? I'm listening to podcasts all the time. I'm not a big music guy. I like talk radio. I grew up in Chicago listening to The Loop, which is all Johnny Brandmeier, Kevin Matthews, Howard Stern, not Man Cow, but you know, he did his thing. He was what he was, but I'm a talk radio guy. That's what I've enjoyed growing up. And, I like to listen to these comedy podcasts or just podcasts in general. And, that's what I have. And when I'm traveling on the road, when I'm at the gym, I'm listening to different stuff. And, a lot of people give me the advice not to do this, you know? They said not to do it. But I look at a guy like Ricky Gervais, who's a billionaire, The Office in England, has his own specials, and he started doing his own podcast just to have fun. And I think it's a fun thing to do. A top comedian in his field, just doing a fun little thing on the internet. Which wrestler has his own thing on the internet? And I might be naive, but I don't think I can name one. And there's a lot of guys who email me and message me and say, hey, Colt, can I have you on my radio interview? And I said, yeah, sure, I love the media. You know, I love the chance to promote myself. And I say, what's your credentials? Where'd you go to broadcasting school? Where's your communication degree? And they'll say, oh, I'm a 15-year-old kid in our basement. We just do this for fun. And I just palm slap my head. Oh, God. But I do it anyways because I want some kind of promotion. I want one person to come to my website and maybe buy a t-shirt. That's the life I live right now. That $15 will save me. So I go on there and I do that. And there's these kids with haven't hit puberty voices who obviously all they did was read my Wikipedia page the day before. And it goes question, answer, question, answer, question, answer to the point where I'm cracking jokes and they don't even have a clue what's going on, and I just start cracking jokes on all of it. And a lot of people have heard some interviews I do that are just disgustingly silly, where I just had it and I just start making shit up, talking about being trained by Jesus Christ, or, you know, wanting to become a wrestler because I saw my dad in his underwear as a kid and I thought that's what grown men did. They wore tight spandex underwear and fucked people, you know, and it just gets to the point where it's brutal, and I'm leading these interviews now. They're interviewing me, but it's gotten to the point where obviously my professionalism has just overtaken, and I'm leading these interviews. And never have I heard, and I'm going to have the opportunity now. Listen, I travel, and those who have no clue who I am, my name's Colt Cabana. I've been wrestling about 12 years now. I've traveled all over the world. I've done tours of Japan, Australia. This is not to brag. I'm just letting you know that I've been around. I was in WWE. I had a cup of coffee in WWE. It was a small, shitty cup of coffee with no cream, but it's not like, you know, it's not like I've never been anywhere or done anything. I've made a living at this since I was 22. I'm 30 years old now. And it's been fun. And each week I go on the road and I bullshit with the wrestlers, man. So why not record it? Why not tape it? Why not get a wrestler's perspective of what's going on in the world, our views, our sights, where it could go, where it needs to go, kind of a younger aspect, a younger perceptive. I don't even know if that's a word. You'll learn a lot of this as this goes on, that I make up words, but we can appreciate it. Perspective, I think would be the right word, and that's what we're going to do. And I know I'm 30 years old, and maybe I'm not the young guy anymore. But I believe that I'm one of the young. You know, when I go, anyways. my first guest, I talked to Sean Daivari. Sean's a great friend of mine. He's one of the smartest guys in the wrestling business. And later on, I'm going to talk to Sean. And you guys are going to get a better idea of who Sean is. I didn't read his Wikipedia page and ask him questions off that. I've known Sean for probably 10 years now. I've seen him go from a scrub who was doing ring work, ring crew, all the way to wrestling Hulk Hogan and Shawn Michaels. And I've been his friend the whole time. I've been in a lot of different locker rooms. I've made a lot of different friends. I've seen friends... main event Madison Square Garden. I've seen friends die, you know, in the wrestling industry. It's crazy. But we're going to get their perspectives, and we're going to talk to them. And we're going to talk about wrestling. And each week, you're not going to come on here, and you're not going to listen to me break down what happened on Raw or what happened on SmackDown. I, you know, go somewhere else for that. You know, I'll probably give you my opinion every now and then on something that we'll talk about, but I'm not going to do a review each week. That is no interest to me. I try to watch all the shows. Sometimes it's pretty rough, as you know, as a wrestling fan. So for this, this is for wrestling fans who love wrestling, and maybe they don't love the wrestling that's presented on Monday night or Thursday nights, but they just love professional wrestling. I grew up loving professional wrestling. I still love professional wrestling. Maybe I don't love what's going on TV right now, but there's that little place in my heart. Maybe that's you. Maybe you don't watch wrestling right now, and you could care less about what's going to happen or what has happened. But here's an inside perspective. We're going to give it to you. And here's a fun story. This week, Masked Lucha Warriors debuted on MTV2. Something different, right? I watched it, and I kind of watched it sadly because myself and Gary Michael Capetta were supposed to be the announcers for it. I was going to do color commentary. He was going to do play-by-play. And unfortunately, a deal wasn't made. I was offered a pretty unfair contract to myself, not to say anything bad about those guys, because you know, they reached out to me. They remembered the praise I had gotten in FCW for what I did with Josh Matthews, and I always appreciated that praise, and I had a great time doing that. And so I was given this opportunity to be on MTV2 as a color commentary, the voice of Lucha Libre Masked Warriors, and I thought, what a fantastic opportunity. Unfortunately, they wanted me to be a mark for being on MTV and not a mark for being able to pay my mortgage or quit everything I'm doing and just work for them. I obviously, listen, I told them I was a mark for MTV. I said, hey, I'm going to be on MTV. I did Matt Classic on Wrestling Society X, and I saw how far that got me. It got me 8 episodes, and we got canceled, so Viva La Bam could go a little further. So, you know, that's the realization. I watched that debut, and it was fun. It was what it was. There was some cool stuff, you know, but that could have been me, and that was hard to watch. But I know that now with this podcast, my future is going to be bright. So take a little break. I'm going to play a wrestling song, I think, in between my little rants and these interviews. This brings back memories. I'd make you guess, but probably wouldn't know. I don't know. But this is the Coliseum home video music song that would play before every Coliseum home video when I would go to a Blockbuster or my local. I don't remember what my local VHS place was when I was a kid. They'd have those hard plastic covers that only like Disney would come in. They weren't the sleeves, they would open up, and you'd get those Coliseum home videos, and on a rare occasion there was a new one, and I remember I would go, and I would get the WrestleMania video tape, and my dad would get porn, and those are the memories that I love, and this song here brings back those memories, and then we'll talk to Sean. So enjoy the song, enjoy the interview. They will get better, we will progress, and hopefully we make something cool here, guys. All right. We're in the Econo Lodge here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's just finished the TV tapings, and welcome. My guest is Sean Daivari.
Hello, how are you, Internet World?
Yes, and this is the first one, man. This is the first podcast, first interview, and I don't really know if it's going to be question to question or just kind of bullshitting. I guess it's a test run, really.
Just go with the flow and see where we wind up.
So that's. But I guess the goal is. Going to let people more into our world, but from a wrestler's perspective on the road, but also you know, not just talk about stupid wrestling today, but just where you've been and just different ideas, and then maybe into different kind of stuff. I've known Sean for a real long time, and I'll say this: when I first started wrestling, some of the first trips I ever took was up to Minnesota. I'd go there once a month with the crew that I trained with: me, CM Punk, Ace Steel, Danny Dominion. And we would go up there. I was probably, I think it was maybe 19 to 22 I did that. And as we would go up there, there was always this little Arab kid doing ring crew. And we all knew about Sean Daivari because Sean Daivari had a website promoting himself before his first match. And that was always...
With pictures.
And that was always kind of, we would always laugh and go, oh, we're going to see the 14-year-old kid with the great website this month. That was, tell us a little bit about your promotional endeavors, probably in junior high school, yeah. During your wrestling career.
It was actually like, I did the website myself, and I learned like HTML code specifically for having a wrestling website. And like, wrestling was a complete fucking... completely different environment than what I had pictured it to be and what I thought it was going to be. but I stuck with my guns of what I thought it was gonna be. So it's like, when I showed up, I had ideas for like names and characters and what the names of my finishing moves were. And like before even I had my first match, I had like tights made with like my logos and my designs on it. And that was kind of like, you know, I was still a kid, you know. I started when I was like 15, so it was like, you're still kind of, you know, have a wild imagination. You're still playing, you know, sort of playing Cowboys and Indians, except I was playing pro wrestler. And that was kind of like, I was you know, going to my treehouse every day and thinking of like wrestling stuff. And my treehouse is my wrestling school. And yeah, that was something like I actually just somehow or some way came across like my original website. I think I had it saved on like an old broken computer I don't use. And like I was looking at it, and I used to like write out descriptions of my matches.
And I remember that. And I remember going,
it would say like, I arm dragged so and so twice. And then
Lenny
like,
Lane,
yeah, different people. And then I put that, and I went back and I read it now, and I was going, oh my god, this is. I don't know what wrestling fans thought about it, but I could imagine any other wrestler that saw this would be like,
which would be Punk.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure everybody. Yeah. I mean, every wrestler looked at this like, what a fucking retard.
And I still remember that to this day. Now you say you knew what your name was. Your real name's not Sean, right?
No, my name is Dara Daivari.
Right. And in the story we all always hear is, and I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but we always hear that you're trained by Eddie Sharkey, yeah. Right? Or at least at Eddie Sharkey's camp, and that he would tell everybody that if anyone was a skinny young kid, that you're the next Sean Waltman.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
And you were the one to actually believe it.
Yeah, I was so like naive and just not even to wrestling, just naive to life. Like I said, I was like, you know, 15, 16 years old at this time point. And that was something that I didn't even catch on to. And like, you know, he was like, it's the next Sean Waltman. You know, he'd say that to everybody.
And you said, my name's now Sean Daivari.
Yeah, it was. Because I knew I didn't like Dara Daivari, because the one time I did wrestle as Dara Daivari, there's a girl in the Midwest, her name was Lacey, and they had a picture of her on the poster, and then it's like, you know, Wrestling Tonight, blah, 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 Dara Daivari. And Dara kind of sounds like a girl's name. You may think it's Dara or something.
Right.
And everybody went up to her at the show, like, oh, are you Dara or Dara from the poster? She's like, no, I'm Lacey. And her name wasn't on there, but her picture was, for whatever reason.
So what was your wrestling name going to be when you had it all mapped out?
I don't remember. I remember I had, like, some Arab stuff. I remember, like, I thought Arafat was funny. Like, I was like, God, there's so many syllables and consonants in it. That would be something funny. I never really stuck to much else, but this Sean thing came up when it was coming up, like my second or third match. Mind you, my first match was at my trainer's son's graduation party, so I don't even know if you could consider that
graduation, like, of what, high school?
Yeah, like they set up a ring in his yard, and like,
and it was probably all old men and you.
It was like six people, not even. Yeah. Like the kid must have been a dork because nobody came.
Oh Jesus. Okay.
Austin Aries was the fucking wake up call when, like, my heart was just broken when, like, Aries started maybe 6 to 8 months after I started. And then he obviously showed promise, just like, you know, anyone with any sort of, you couldn't believe the number of fucking idiots that come through the door. So anyone that's like not completely uncoordinated and looks like a complete fucking waterhead, you know, you can tell his potential. And then as soon as, like, he did a couple things that showed potential, Eddie was like, oh, look at this kid, he's great, keep it up, he'll be the next Sean Waltman. And right there I was just like, oh, win, sales, gone.
Sean Aries.
Yeah.
Tell me about some of the morons. There's obviously guys that, we go to wrestling school,
yeah.
and there's guys that make it. Obviously, where I came from, guys like CM Punk and Brad Bradley went on to be Ryan Braddock, and Eric Priest was the AWA champion for a little bit. But there's guys that I remember, like Ricky Noga,
yeah.
Who was a 40-year-old Chinese guy who played an Asian, because he kind of looked like Steamboat.
Yeah.
There was this guy named Face Superior, who was a black kid, and he wrestled in sweatpants and had an NWO knee pad. Like, there's your goofs that just don't make it.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember some of your goofs?
Not specifically. I know.
You don't remember guys that trained?
I'm trying to rack my brain. Like, I don't. There's a guy that's apparently still wrestling around there. His name was Ian Xavier.
A big fat fuck.
And just would pummel the shit out of me every day, because that was, you know, like, he was the fucking butt of every joke to every other wrestler that was around. So he'd be like, oh, here's new guys, and I can, you know, tell them I'm a big deal, and they'll believe it, which I did. I thought he was, like,
sure.
You know, the bee's knees when I met him. Just beat the shit out of you. Just a complete fat fuck with nasty, long, like, wrestler hair that was, like, shaved underneath. So it's pretty much just, like, a comb-over mohawk. And, like, he was like a gimmick on top of a gimmick on top of a gimmick. Like, I remember one time we were doing a show and like, he's fat as fuck. He has long black hair, and then he had face paint on as well. But he was also had that, like, you know, at the, it was like right after like Bret Hart got done with his like heel run, like 1998-99. So and then he was like also Canadian on top of this. So he had a Canadian flag wrapped around him. He had a steel chair that had his name painted on it, like not even like professionally, like typographed or anything or stenciled on there, just painted on there his name.
Very Balls Mahoney.
Yeah, very right? Exactly. Yeah. Except not artistic at all, just like shitty. And then he had a hockey stick that he'd bring out to the ring in his other hand. And then I remember the like the high spot of all high spots was he was going out to ring and he took like fucking like 100 yards of chain and wrapped it around his neck. And one of the wrestlers looked at me and went, "Oh, and chains."
Like Sharky sat him down. He's like, "You need stuff." To, like, Duggan's got the 2x4. Yeah. What do you have?
Everything else. It was absolutely ridiculous. And then, mind you, he was like a fat guy on his own, and a fat guy kind of is a gimmick.
Sure,
you
know?
Like,
sure, sure.
Like,
sure.
You're the fat guy. There's not very many, like...
And is there a fat guy with chains?
Yeah. And not hockey sticks. And not only, like, a fat guy, he was, like, a ridiculously fat guy. He wasn't, like, just... Like,
he tagged with Big Daddy Hoofer.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they have a tag name? I don't remember.
Yeah, Cruel Intentions.
Cruel, sorry.
Rookie Doi.
Okay, now, my dad was, sold, Urban Apparel as a kid.
Yeah.
He sold, what's Sean Diddy's clothing? Sean John.
Sean John.
My dad sold Sean John. He sold Janko jeans. If you remember those Janko jeans long in the bottom.
I never had a pair, but everybody else did.
And so I found myself wearing Janko jeans, and I would wear whatever he had because that's what he sold.
Yeah.
Now, you grew up, your parents owned a pizza parlor.
Yeah.
Right? How are you not the fattest kid in the world? Because I'm saying, like, I wore all those jeans because they were accessible.
Yeah.
If my parents owned a pizza parlor, not that I wasn't, I'm pretty girthy as it is, I think I'd be just the biggest tub of all time.
Yeah, well, one thing is I have, like, skinny jean genetics like you wouldn't believe. Like, if you ever saw my dad today at, like, 60 years old, he still looks like he's fucking a starving immigrant. Like, he's never had a...
And does he eat his own... What do you eat his own pizza
all the time? Yeah, he just eats bullshit. He doesn't even diet or eat well. Just eats, like, bullshit. He's just, like, a skinny Borat-looking dude. Just, like...
So were you eating a lot of pizza as a kid?
No, well, and that was the thing, like...
And what was your pizza place called?
The pizza place is called Leaning Tower of Pizza, and it's still there. There's two in Minneapolis, and, like, we lived in the suburbs, which is about 25 minutes outside of downtown, and he worked in downtown, and it was, like, a restaurant/bar. So, like, my dad would not come home until after the bar closed, which is, like, 2 a.m., in Minneapolis, and then, you know, so he would be getting up to, probably cleans up or everything, like 2:30, 3-ish, he's out the door, doesn't get home till 3:30. So we were already, like, long to bed before he'd even come home, and even the days he would come early, it was like, you know, 25-mile drive, pizza gets kind of cold between now and then, so, like, it was never really...
When you were in high school, would you be around the bar?
A little bit, not too much.
Like, bar stories?
No, nothing good. Like, I didn't go, like, my... Like I said, I started wrestling when I was, like, 15 is when I started training. I had, like, my first matches when I was, like, 16. So, like, pretty much most teenagers get their freedom when they get their driver's license and get a car. So from the time I had, like, somewhat freedom to do and what I want, kind of fuck off a little bit, it was always, like, I was involved in the independent wrestling scene. So that was what I did. I never, like,
wasn't
you know...
Wasn't eat a shitload of pizza and watch a bunch of drunk
no,
people?
No, it wasn't at all. There's so many things that, like, I've never, in 4 years, I will have been wrestling 50% of my life.
Right.
Which, you know, it's not a lot of people get that way.
And it's something I say a lot is that I say that I've been, my whole adult life, all I know in my adult life is professional, is the life of a professional wrestler.
I don't know anything else
because
of a teenage
life. Because I started
life.
At 18, right? That's interesting that
like,
your teenage life.
Kids tell me all the time, they're like, oh yeah, like, you know, my wife's a perfect example. She'll tell me, yeah, you know, so-and-so would get a keg, and we'd fucking sit around their garage, and, you know, we would drink beer and listen to fucking whatever was hot, Blink-182 CD or whatever, and I was like, I never did any of that shit, and, like, and actually, I think it helped me as mature as a human being is that from when I was 16 or 17, I was traveling with guys that were in their mid to late 20s, sometimes early 30s, and, like, you know, they would sneak me into bars and stuff, so I've never sat around with a bunch of other high school kids and fucking tapped a keg and you know, talked about how hot Jenny McCarthy was. You know, I was like literally, I remember I fucked off maybe twice and I really, really embarrassed myself because, you know, I've spent time with, you know, forced with like my wife's little brother. He's about 17 now. He's even older than I was. And hanging out with him is like, fuck, how annoying is it hanging out with this kid? And other wrestlers had to deal with that. Austin Aries tells me all the time, like, what a fucking annoying little bastard I was. He's like, I could just, you drove me crazy. I couldn't stand being around you. You were just this annoying fucking kid, you know? And like, at the time we met, I was 16. He was like 23 or 24. Sure. So he, you know, significantly more mature than me. And then, yeah, like I said, I fucked off once or twice and just was annoying little bitch to have around. And then from there, I kind of grew up really quick. I remember one time I got really fucking drunk. And
what age?
17 maybe. Okay. Maybe 16, 17. This is actually the reason why I never get like shit face smashed anymore. And it was after a show, and I was talking with one of the wrestlers who was dating another girl wrestler at the time. And I was just all drunk and saying, like, yeah, whatever, you know, so-and-so, and we do this with the other chicks and blah, 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 and we go out of town and stuff. And, like, his girlfriend was right there. And then he just kind of got into it, just started cussing me out and said, fucking, you know, this may be, you know, some bullshit you fucking do on the weekends, but this is A, my relationship, and B, going to be my career. And just had him just cuss me out. And he was, you know, maybe 240 pounds. And I was, like, maybe 150 at the time. Sure. And I was going, no, fuck you. I'll kick your ass. Let's go. And
he's like, here, I can offer you a free pizza if you want.
Yeah, I'll offer you a pizza to make it better. at least my dad can. And then, yeah, then he obviously knew better. He knew if he fucking punched me once, I'd probably die.
Sure.
And then the next morning, I fucking soaked. You know, I passed out in the car. He ended up carrying me like a fucking newlywed bride, like, into his house and put me in his couch. And fucking, I puked all over myself, and he took my clothes off and changed my clothes for me. And then the next morning when I sobered up and realized, well, I was like, oh my God, I'm not, you know, you're going to have to, A, grow up quick because this shit will not fly too often. Sure. And then that was, like I said, that was maybe, I might have still been 16, maybe 17, and then from there it was kind of like I grew up pretty quick, and now it's you know, people always tell me, like, even when I met them, like, you know, I was in WWE when I was like 19, 20 years old, and when people would find out how young I was, they'd be like, hey, because I look like shit, I look like I'm fucking 45 in the face, but they're always like, I had no idea you were that young, because you don't act like any other 19 or 20 years old. And that's why I'd say, like, when I was, you know, 16, 17, I was kind of forced to act like I was 23, 24, 25. And then when I actually got to be 22, 23 years old, now I feel kind of like I'm in my 30s, you know.
Right.
I have more common with wrestlers like Jerry Lynn than I do with some of the younger guys that are actually my age.
And what's interesting is that I always say that, like, the years that I broke in. Now, what year did you break in?
2000?
99. Okay, 99. And yeah. I say the year 90. When I was breaking in 99, and especially in the Midwest, it was like, nowadays it's a lot of kids, and it still was kids when I was breaking in and stuff, but it was like just the end of like the real old guys still hanging around, the AWA guys and whatnot. And you know, me being an 18, 19 year old kid, like, it was in the locker room was mainly men. There's a lot of young kids now, like, and I'm not saying like, oh, there's kids, I'm not gonna be that guy, but you know, like,
I am
the age is a lot lower now, especially in the independent shows. But when I first started, there was, you know, I do these shows in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and there was 35, 40-year-old guys, and that wasn't weird. Nowadays, Steve Carino's a fucking weirdo because he's 40 years old, which is unfortunate. But so now you're this young kid, especially in these locker room with older guys. Now you're 19 and 20, and you're in the WWE.
Yeah.
So kind of tell us a little bit, like...
That was something, like I said, I felt like I was properly prepared for that because of the same situation like you, where I'd had a chance to work with people that were significantly older than me. And you know, you kind of match your surroundings, and because I had that surrounding, I was kind of able to mimic and fall in that environment. So when I got there, I will always, you know, I always knew, like, you know, what was up and what was down. I very rarely got caught in the crossfires of bullshit and stuff, because at that point I'd already been wrestling for approximately 5 years. I've been able to meet and talk people that have done things and been places that gave me like advice and suggestions and stuff, and I kind of blended in right in with no problem, where there was people that were like in years alive older than me that they were perceived as like younger than me, because not so much because they haven't been wrestling as long, maybe they only had 2 or 3 years and stuff, but because, like I said, they didn't know, like I said, they were like, you know, my wife, for example. When they were 16, 17, 18 years old, they were sitting around a garage fucking with a bunch of guys slamming kegs. So the next step up from that was being 20, 21, 22, 23 years old, which again, like you said, there's men in that locker room. Yeah. A lot of them were like 40 years old with wives and, you know, a couple kids. Some of them even had kids that were my age. Like, I got along really good with Animal, and Animal had a son that's like 3 years younger than me, you know? So it was like, me and Animal's son were closer in age than me and Animal, but me and Animal had more in common, you know?
And that's the bond, but it's also the bond of wrestling, I guess. That.
Yeah, the bond of wrestling, but like I said, it's... like I said, just a lot of it is I don't feel my age. I don't feel like I act my age. And like I said, the people I hang out with, they tell me, like I'll use Jerry Lynn, for example. Like, me and Jerry Lynn can hang out all day and we'll get along fine and whatever. But I promise you, you put him with another 25-year-old, eventually Jerry's going to be like, this fucking kid's driving me crazy,
sure,
you know?
Sure, you moved down from Minnesota to Louisville to say, hey, I want to be a WWE superstar. Yeah. What age was that?
That was 18.
Okay, at 18... Did you tell your parents about it? Did you talk to them about it?
Sort of. I've been fortunate, you know, it's been easier for me that my parents are completely clueless to this day as to what exactly it is that I do.
Like, where are your parents from exactly?
Both my mom and dad were from Tehran, Iran, and they immigrated to the United States in the 70s, and then shortly thereafter in the early 80s, me and my brother were born. And then,
and so are they of the hey, he's 18, it's go now, it's your turn to be your own life?
No, not really. I mean, they did all the bullshit. Like, they told me to go to college, and they were concerned with that. They're like extremely Americanized. Like I said, when my mom and dad both moved to the United States, they were like, you know, my mom, I think, was 19, and my dad was like 21. So it's like, now that they're in their 50s, you know, fuck, I think my dad's might be in his early 60s. They've been in the United States longer than over there, and like we were talking about earlier, they've lived their mature adult life in the States, so they don't the only life they know from over there is kids when they're kind of, you know, spoon fed by their parents everything, and like I said, to this day I really don't think my parents exactly understand what it is I do. Like, they know wrestling is this thing that happens on TV sometimes, and people go watch it, and it's
grown man fake. Yeah, you're paying bills.
Yeah, and like I said, they really don't get.
And what you look it really is strong, do. Obviously.
Yeah.
Our little Sean's going to the gym.
That's like my parents don't watch, like, when I was on like TV, like Raw or SmackDown, they wouldn't watch it. Like, it's weird because I meet other people's parents that are like
would you say, hey, I'm on TV? Did you say, hey, watch me this?
No, not really. Right. They weren't interested. Like I said, I really don't think they grasp what it is.
Once you weren't ready to put that pizza in that fucking oven.
Yeah, then they washed their hands at me.
If you couldn't make a pepperoni pie, you're no good to them, yeah. Iranians.
And I mean, it was even, like I said, but I kind of left them in the dark. Like, I know a lot of people are just like, hey, mom, dad, I'm doing this show, you should come, or I'm going to be on TV at this time. And, you know, they clue their parents in. It was never, I've never really been like a super tight family guy either. I moved out when I was 17 years old. I was on my own. Like I said, a lot of it had to do with wrestling, right, that I felt like I was doing my own shit.
You've been around mature people now.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, it was, and I've never, like, even now, even when I lived, you know, 15 miles away from my mom and dad, I saw them maybe twice a year. Now that I live 1,000 miles away, I see them even less. And we don't talk, you know, sometimes I'll go 3, 4, 5 months without talking to them on the phone. It's not that I dislike them or they dislike me or anything. It's just I'm kind of a loner. The only person that's really into my life is my wife, you know, and how she got in, I have no fucking idea, but she snuck her way in somehow.
That's what wives do, I guess.
Yeah, right? Fucking snuck up on me, and now I'm stuck with her.
And I remember talking to you at the time, and you debuted with these vignettes saying, in WWE with fucking, what's his name?
Hussein. Muhammad, yeah.
Muhammad Hassan. And I remember you telling me these ideas that you had that you were trying to pitch to creative, and you were telling me how, and I remember at the time I was pretty naive to it. I was doing ROH, and you were telling me the politics of the creative team even at that time. And you were like, you got to tell one person because you can't tell everybody, because then that one person will go and they'll say it's not their idea, and then they'll get credit for it, and that's good as long as you can get your idea going. But the idea was that you wanted to go in saying, "Hey, we're not these Arabs that are going to blow everything down. We're an American." Tell me how much, like, your view of how those first couple vignettes were to how much they were on TV, because I thought on TV they were some of the best things that they've done to introduce a character. Tell me how much of that input was you?
A lot of it was both me and Muhammad, because none of it was really written out, you know? And I should say a lot of the credit goes to the editor, because they literally, like one, I remember we were at an airport, and they just had the cameras rolling, and they said, you know, talk about how you're discriminated at the airports. And we did like one take, and then they're like, okay, just say it again in just different words. And we did it again, And then they're like, anything you want to say? And then I was like, yeah, maybe we should have a thing of us going through the x-ray machine. Because it was like a small, like, one-gate airport that they rented for the day, and they had, you know, fake actors in there. And mind you, this was at the time when, like...
How much do you think that fake actor got?
Maybe $250, you know, I think, like, a day's rate. No, like, you would never, ever, ever see production like that today for guys anymore. Like, I would dare say from... They booked an airport, rented out an entire airport, rented out a private jet so it could just drive back and forth on the runway in the background to look like there's action going to the airport. Yeah. And that was just one of them. We did one in a neighborhood where we rented out like a neighborhood for like a community that was being built. Like they rented out a neighborhood. They had like boom cameras and stuff coming in. You know, like this you could tell it was a big deal, and they don't do it anymore. Just like in the olden days, this was something I think they wanted to get going again, as they were really big on the vignettes, and we were lucky at that time. There was a wave of like two or three of us, and they just pulled the plug on it. One before us was Carlito. Okay. Carlito got
which got him over right away.
He got like a really good high budget set of introductions. Mm-hmm. Then we came in next, same thing, really high budget, expensive stuff. And the one person after us was Chris Masters. Chris Masters got some really good vignettes and stuff of him like posing and flexing in a museum and on a turning pedestal where he was like a human statue and shit. And then and that was the last one. You've never seen anything like that since.
When I debuted, it was Kofi. I remember Kofi got some, and that was way before I got up.
Yeah.
But we were in development at the same time. We're like, wow, he got these nice ones on the beach. And then obviously Kazarni got those. And they didn't rent out. They didn't rent out the carnival. Yeah. They just kind of took him to a carnival. And they said, they just kind of smartened up some of the guys and just said, hey, kind of, you know.
Exactly. I'm sure they did it with a fraction of the budget. I'm sure they did it with one camera. And then, you know, and they.
But even the time I was in developmental, going like, wow, they flew you there and they probably put you up in a hotel. The guy was really excited.
It was crazy. Like, for us, we had limo service, we had catering at these shoots, and each shoot was about a 15-hour day. And we did maybe about a week and a half of them.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's you could tell. And that was something, too. That was my only time there where I felt like I was properly figured in, because you would show up and they'd say, here's what you do. Like we would do like week numbers, so there's always like 4 weeks between pay-per-views, and they'd be like, here's what you're doing week one, here's what you're doing week two, we're not 100% about week three, and this is how the go home at week four is going to go, and this is what's happening at the pay-per-view. This would happen like a one Monday Night Raw, and things would pan out exactly as planned. And then, like I said, even later on when I was doing stuff with other top guys like Kurt Angle and Mark Henry and Great Khali and stuff, like shit was just fly by the seat of your pants. Didn't have stuff figured out. They didn't know what they were doing. Like, so it was unfortunate. That was one of the few times that I really felt like they had their shit together and they were figuring it out. You know, this was something that was figured into Vince McMahon's product.
Right.
They still do that kind of shit with like Undertaker and John Cena and stuff, but nobody in the undercard gets opportunities like that anymore. Even like I remember Carlito was getting that kind of treatment before he hurt his shoulder, and then they just put the brakes on him for whatever reason. But yeah, it's kind of the way the thing goes.
I think this podcast, we want to be kind of positive. So you went on it and you obviously did the Hulk Hogan bullshit. You wrestled Hogan, you know, the Undertaker. You were with Carlito. Tell me one guy that you thought you couldn't believe was such a nice guy, and one guy, I guess, if you want to, who was just like, wow, this guy was an asshole.
And yeah, I hate saying it. I never minded saying it before now, but almost because he's dead, I feel like it's bad to say. But Test was a fucking dickhead.
Test was a dickhead.
Complete fucking asshole, and I never understood why. He's never drawn a dollar. He's never fucking sold out Madison Square Garden. He's never headlined a pay-per-view. If Ric Flair is a dickhead to me, I can at least be like, well, fuck, he's Ric Flair. He's done everything. I'm a fucking peon to him. But and it wasn't just me. He was actually fairly nice to me. It was me seeing him be a dickhead to everybody else that made me just despise the guy, just talk down to people like they were fucking peons. And like I said, I never minded saying it before, but now people are always like, oh, you shouldn't speak
ill of the dead. I'll tell you, Dr. Death was a piece of shit.
Yeah, so. And so that was one thing. But as far as nice, everybody's been nice, I guess.
The one guy that you're like, wow, I didn't expect that guy to be amazing.
Maybe Bob Holly, because he was painted to be such a dickhead piece of shit. But no, he was you know, as cool as anybody else. I really can't think of... Maybe Vince, when you got him on a good day. Like, he was some... If you got him on a good day, he was surprisingly open and receptive and enlightening. But sometimes if you got him on a bad day, it was just... I always knew Stephanie was the radar. And I'd go to Steph and be like, hey, can I talk to Vince today? And she'd be like, maybe today's not a good day.
One wink, Steph, for everything's okay. Two winks
for me. She'd just flat out say it. And then I'd be like, you know, be like, hey, Steph, you think I could talk to Vince today? She's like, yeah, today's a good day. If you see he's free, go grab him. You know, and he, like, when he had those days that things were going according to plan, he would always be like, yeah, come on in, sit down. And I remember people's jaws would always drop that I'd fucking knock on his door and be like, hey, can we talk? And the people were like, you know, holy fuck, you can't
do that. But I've always heard that he's very open to his tenure.
Yeah, he it's his business model. You know, if I can convince him that I can make, if I can convince him that he's going to pay me $6 million, that means he made fucking 15 off of me. So why would he not, you know, why would he not be open to that kind of stuff? And he says it all the time, but like I said, if you catch him on those bad days, it can be intimidating, and if you try talking to him on a bad day, it could rock your confidence to ever talk to him again.
Yeah.
I got it once or twice, but it never rocked my confidence because the good conversations outweighed like the one or two bad ones we had.
Sure. Who is the most underrated person on the creative side of?
Pat Patterson.
Pat Patterson.
Yeah, but he wasn't really creative. So
there's a lot of young creative people while I was there that I just felt were had fun ideas, but just got shot down because you know, they didn't have the balls to bring it up to the big guy or whatever.
Right.
You know, was there anyone who were like, man, this guy's got a lot of good ideas, but he's just...
It was hard to tell because, like you said, you never seen him come to fruition.
Right.
People would say that, I'm like, oh, that could be good, or oh, that could be good, but an idea is only as good as the execution.
Yeah.
And like you said, it would before it even get to execution, it would get shot down, so you never saw how it panned out. So many of them came through, I don't even know their fucking names. I know the head writers of the shows, but I can't even remember one associate writer or assistant writer. My life depended on it.
Tell me why Sean Devari is different, man.
Now I can tell you. Like, now I really, really have a firm, and it sucks because not a lot of people do TV, but I really have a good concept of how television pro wrestling works. And that's something that I've had the advantage of. Like I said, I don't do TV very many places, or if I do TV, it's such small-time Bush League stuff that it don't really matter. But like, now I know how to do proper television, and I can instill that in the guy I'm working, and I can make it a polished and well product to be presented on television. Unfortunately,
so you're strictly a TV wrestler.
TV wrestler. No, I mean, like, the live events are easy. Like, anyone, if you're given a blank canvas and say, okay, 10 minutes, go out there and do whatever you want, you have to be fucking rotten to not have a good match there.
But it's easy. It's easy to me to say with you. I see so many guys just in trunks, and I go, why are you different? What do you have to offer? I mean, the obvious answer for you is
I'm
an Arab wrestler. Yeah. I'm a gimmick, and you know, it's so easy to throw an American flag on somebody and say boo him, him. How much do you like using that, or do you not like using that?
I don't mind at all. It's completely up to the promoter.
Yeah.
It's up to the promoter, and it's up to the audience. Like, if I knew in Ring of Honor, I said this Arab shtick will not get over, and they will shit all over it. And I brought it up to Adam, and I brought it up to he brought it up to Cornette, and I also even mentioned like a Steve Austin thing. I said, you know, in ECW, Steve Austin did these cool things where he said he's not fucking stunning Steve Austin, he's just Steve Austin who he is. And I said, let's can we go in that direction? They said, yeah, sure. And we did, and it still has some, like, you know, foreigner undertone to it, but it's not coming out, you know, USA Hak Fatui, you know, bullshit like that. And they said, you know, just go out there and be Sean Devari, whatever that is. And like I said, I feel a little handicapped with it because I don't know what to do with it. Like, there's a lot of times where I know, like, little foreigner Arab mannerisms or things to say that come to mind just from, you know, having so many in my back pocket from years and years of wrestling like that. But I think it's slowly coming to, and like I said, it's kind of cool to do, but it's knowing your audience. I know the Ring of Honor audience wouldn't like that shit. And I know, like, you know, when I go to Canada or, you know, Europe and stuff, I really can't play on the crowd too much for that, because, you know, they really don't have heat with Arabs. Mm-hmm. Like, in Europe, there's more Arabs than black people, you know, so it's like, over there it doesn't work. But, you know, here in the States, it, depending on the baby face I'm working with, like, you know, I can feel the crowd in the match and know how heavy to take it, how relevant to make it, or how irrelevant to make it to the match.
Yeah, it's something I love to do. You know, obviously I love comedy and I love to do comedic wrestling. And it's like, when I'm doing a serious match and, like, I see an opening to make, like, a fart joke.
Yeah.
Like, I want to do it so bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to hold myself back.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I feel the same way, too. There's
it's like, oh, you just gave me that. I want to make a fart noise, make everybody laugh, but I have to be a serious wrestler here. Before we jet, man, anything to plug or...
My website, SeanDevari.com. There's merchandise on there. Please buy some stuff.
And that's the point of actually, you know, a lot of this is to support the local wrestlers. You know, Sean really isn't a contracted wrestler now. Even though when he was contracted, he was an independent contractor. But, you know, we're out here in the hustle, and, you know, we really appreciate your support. So it's SeanDavari.com.
Yeah, you can go on there, and then you can get a hold of my agent on there. It's BookDavari@gmail.com. I do independent shows, clinics, training camps, you know, autographs, meet and greets, conventions, whatever people need me for.
Pizza parlor openings.
Pizza parlor grand opening, but you have to supply your own giant scissors. I will bring the ribbon.
And, where do you want to see wrestling go in the future, man?
For me or for the business?
That just kind of like, you know, it's something that wrestling needs or anything.
It needs to evolve. Like, it's the form, like, in the mid-90s, not mid-90s, in the early 90s, they had a wrestling formula that was dated. And the only reason it evolved is out of necessity, because WCW was kind of getting the concept of evolving the formula, and WWE was not, and they got, WWF was not, and they got left in the dust, and they almost kind of, you know,
they were about to go under.
Yeah, Cornette told me that. I think it was like 1995. Vince McMahon lost $6 million that year, and they were forced to evolve out of necessity. And then they evolved their formula better than WCW's formula, and came back and ended up, you know, not because of WWF, but eventually WCW went out of business. That formula that evolved, let's say it's a formula from 1998, 1999, is the same formula that's in play today in 2010. Right. And because there's no other promotion to knock them on their ass and put them to $6 million loss, necessity is not going to force them to evolve again, and they're just going to stick with it. And it's tired, and it has all the numbers and all the statistics to prove that the audience is tired with it. So I don't know who it is. I thought TNA might have been that chance, but it doesn't look like
that. Now that you're not with them, it's definitely not.
I knew that when I got with them. I knew that when I got with them. It wasn't their chance. They very much follow WWE's formula,
right?
And that's. If anyone knows to be successful in the marketplace, you need to provide an alternative.
Yeah.
You know, that's like Kia from Korea. They can't put out as good a car as Toyota.
She's a good
Awesome Kong as well. She's okay, but she's not from Korea. No, Kia can't put out as good a car as Toyota, and they will always have a piece of the marketplace, but they will never overtake Toyota until they figure out how to make their alternative better than, or just something different than. And that's the case with TNA. TNA just provides the same formula that WWE provides, possibly because a lot of the key players are people from that system that generated that formula.
Yeah.
And now just some wrestling company or someone has to come along with an alternative. I don't know what it is, but no one will know until they try it and see what works. But if anyone ever in a million years would have guessed Jersey Shore would have blown up the way it has, it was somebody that took a chance on a different formula. It was they had the real world, they had road rules. What is it, road rules?
Rules, real world challenge.
Yeah, like shit like that. And somebody said, let's try a different formula. Yeah. Let's try typecasting the characters. Let's not have a concoction of different walks of life.
Somebody said, let's have trampoline basketball. And I watched it on TV.
Was it good?
It didn't make it, but one of the guys from Tough Enough was on the season one of Trampoline Basketball. I forgot what it was called, though.
Yeah, but like I said,
you got to give it a shot.
You have to give it a shot, offer an alternative, and like I said, sometimes like Trampoline Basketball, you'll get left in the dust, or sometimes like Jersey Shore, you'll fucking blow up and become a cultural phenomenon.
Right, and sometimes Viva La Bam is just Viva La Bam.
Yeah, it never goes anywhere. But I will say, how huge was originally the Tom Green Show when it came along, followed up by Jackass.
Right.
This was something that said, hey, let's not try scripted comedic material. Let's try something else. Let's just try whatever the fuck, have the cameras roll and see what happens. And it blew up for a couple years, and same problem after a while.
Got stale.
Yeah, it's like I said, the formula didn't evolve. If you walk out your front door today and see two cows fucking, you can go, holy shit, look at these cows, they're fucking. But by Thursday, you walk out and say, oh, those cows are fucking again.
Well, I'd still be turned down a little bit.
Get
about it. But I get the point. Well, Sean, man, I appreciate it. We'll see how many guests I eventually get.
Yeah, do we have to shake hands when we're done with this? Do people know we're laying in bed face-to-face with
each other? We are laying to bed in this hotel. One of the wrestlers has taken a shower during our podcast interview here.
One's dead on the floor. One's in bed with you.
We have some
CSI or something. CSI. Cold case.
Well, depending on how many guests I get on this thing, you might be a regular, or this just might be a one-time only. thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
See you, man.
So there it was. We were laying down in two different beds in the Economy Lodge in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I was talking to my friend, Sean DeVar. We travel all the time, but this time we bullshit a little bit. We put it on a podcast for you to listen to. And that's going to be it. I think maybe I have a ways to go in my interviewing skills. I'm not really sure. I think eventually I'd like to make it a free-flowing conversation, but give it time. And I'm sure Sean's going to be back. Sean is such a smart mind. He's such a young guy, and he has such an unbelievable mind. And I want you guys to see that. Of course, you know, when you go to the shows, you know, boo him if he's the heel. You know, have fun. It's an art. It's an entertainment. But I'm going to give you a little insight to some of these guys, including myself. You know, that's the point. Of course, you know, I'm trying to win you over. When was the last time you saw me be a heel? I'm a true baby face at heart. So I'm just one of you guys, man. But now I got a podcast, and I'm making it happen. This is The Art of Wrestling. Please go see tsmradio.com, Stu Stone, SundayNightStu.com. And if you have questions, comments, concerns, I think I'm eventually going to do a Facebook page and a Twitter, I think. Let's just see. We'll make it happen. I'm not even sure right now. But coltwrestling@gmail.com is my email. And, you know, if you want to give me feedback, I'd love to listen to it. But I think eventually when I get a Facebook and Twitter, we'll really get into some feedback. But that's the episode, guys. That's it. Coltmerch.com. Get a picture. Support me. Hey, I need to buy a Jimmy John's after this, guys. And one picture will do it. One of your pictures will buy me a number 8. Hold the mayo, hold the onion. That's all I'm asking for, guys. All right, we'll see you next week, hopefully. Art of Wrestling. I'm Colt Cabana.